May the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and redeemer. Please be seated. Blessed Feast of the Epiphany, and happy birthday to Epiphany. Our church was established 76 years ago, this day, the Feast of the Epiphany. A nice, decent age. Epiphany, the Feast of the Three Kings, or Dia de los Reyes, is celebrated around the world with parades and processions and crowns and candles and fireworks and gifts and cake. I didn't grow up celebrating this. Baptists kind of stop on the 25th and then put everything away. But now I love observing the full 12 days of Christmas, stretching out all the candy and chocolate, and also having time to surface from the wider culture's expectations around Christmas, to focus on this feast of wonder and persistence, of revelation and light, and also cake. As we hear in our gospel today, this feast usually focuses on the Magi, the wise ones from the East who follow the star to Bethlehem. And we have traditions that name and number them, three men, Balthazar, Caspiar, and Melchior. Their photo was in the parish email. They spent Christmastide in the cupboard, in the sacristy, but now you should be able to see them in our nativity. And it also portrays them with camels and draped in fine robes, but we actually know very little about them. Not even that there were three. There are three gifts, but we don't know how many travelers there were. And they may have been court astronomers or philosopher scientists like the mathematician in the bath, or soothsayers, fortune tellers in the court of a king. And they may have come from Assyria or Persia or Babylon. And we can interpret that it was their job to watch and analyze the stars. And also we can guess that they or their sponsor or their king had the money to fund this long journey. And they had the status to be admitted into Herod's court. But all we really know is that they saw a star that promised a new king. And they were disturbed or curious or excited enough, or the people they worked for were disturbed or excited or curious enough that they left their homes and their families and their communities, and they took a month-long journey into the unknown to find and greet and honor a child born the king of the Jews. And so these supposedly wise men arrive in Jerusalem after months of travel, and they're probably really excited and really tired, and so they find a hostel. They wash off all the camel hair, and they eat a good meal, and they get a good night's sleep on a bed, not out on the ground, and they put on their best robes, and they go to the palace to see the king. Because, of course, that's where you find kings and their babies, right? In palaces? King Herod, however, was not happy to hear talk of a true king. He had been raised Jewish, and he had a Jewish mother, but his father was from Edom, which is just across the Jordan River, and his ancestors were converts to Judaism from the region around Petra, where some of you might have been on pilgrimage, now in Jordan. And his father had been close to Julius Caesar, who had put him in charge of the region of Judea, and his family, his uncles and his brothers, had governed and taxed and militarily occupied Judea and the Galilee for Rome for several decades. But the violence and the intrigue and the backing of Rome that allowed him to be ruler politically did not authenticate or validate him with the Jewish people. His Authority there had always been tenuous and based on negotiations with the religious authorities. And so now these men show up in court claiming a king descended from David, the true king of the Jews. And today's reading and today's feast, it mainly focuses on the sweet and lovely part of the story, the hope and the persistence of the Magi and their success in finding their way to Bethlehem and interpreting the star, and their relief and gratefulness in meeting the Christ child and the beauty and richness of the gifts. What the reading leaves out, though, are the prophetic dreams that warn the wise men to go home by another way, avoiding Herod, and the dream that warns Joseph to take his little family and flee to Egypt, where probably he spent all those rich gifts, getting across borders and putting a roof over the family he had who were now refugees. It leaves out Herod's rage and the slaughter of the innocents and the final dream that warns Joseph that even after Herod dies, he cannot return to Bethlehem. And so they continue their displacement and go to Nazareth, a quiet backwater town in the hill country, far from palaces and kings. Today's feast day story leaves out the disturbing and the uncomfortable parts that come with an epiphany, as our stories of discovery often do. We remember how Galileo's scientific discoveries led him to be tried for heresy because he said the Earth orbited the sun. We remember that Martin Luther King Jr., now an icon of justice, was feared and hated only a few decades ago because he insisted on talking about race and poverty. And just in the last few years, how cell phone videos of police violence have led to Black Lives Matter protests. True epiphanies are never comfortable in the culture or in our own lives. Whether they come suddenly or slowly, they show us the world in a new and true light, and they call us to change. We are leaving the weeks of Christmas behind with all the cake and entering into a little season of epiphanies, of manifestations, of showing forth. Over and over in these weeks before Lent, we will hear stories of Jesus showing the world who he truly is and people recognizing that truth. Jesus' cousin John and the baptism in the Jordan. Jesus' mother Mary and the water turned to wine at Cana. And finally, the transfiguration on the mountain, Jesus' face glowing with light. Each epiphany invites those who witness it into new life. Each shows us the one person who can save us, if only we are willing to follow his star. As I mentioned at the beginning of my sermon, today is our patronal feast day and our birthday. Today, the congregation marks 76 years as a church together here in San Carlos. Nearly eight decades since members of St. Peter's in Redwood City gathered their resources and their rich gifts and set out, following signs and the call they received from God, to form a new community here, in a place where they recognized both need and possibility. We, too, in a search, are in a season of seeking, a season of setting out. Like the wise ones long ago, we look for the signs of where God is calling us. It is a season for curiosity and hope, for opening our hearts and being willing to leave the familiar in order to follow God's call. who are we as God's people in this place? What is God's love calling us to be? These weeks before Lent, these weeks of seeing Jesus manifest and heal and disrupt and transform the world are also part of ordinary time, which to us sounds like plain and actually means we're counting, but Godly Play calls it the great green growing season of the life of the church. We have one before Lent and then one after Pentecost that goes all the way through the summer. And right now, with the long nights and the rain and the mud, it might not feel like a growing season. But right now, the fallow earth is soaking up the rain that will sustain us through the hot months of summer. Right now, seeds we cannot see are germinating. Right now, the bulbs we planted years or months ago are bursting into flower and new life, and they show us life and hope. All around us, new life is stirring. Inside of us, in the part known most truly and deeply by God, full and true life is stirring. On this day of the Epiphany, we are called to notice these signs of new life and to bless them. Like the wise ones so long ago, it is time to be looking for these signs and letting them excite and disturb us, and let them show us new life and the new world God has for us. Letting them show us how to follow Jesus, our new King. Amen.